are listening to Teacher Toolkit, supporting teachers, parents, and students worldwide.
Probably the most important number one thing that you need to do in your first year of teaching is find people who love teaching, who love the kids, whose work you want to emulate, because you will become like them if you hang out with them.
We help teachers thrive and survive with classroom ideas, cutting-edge school resources, and research-informed teacher training materials. You will also hear discussions on the policy, guidance, and research-based publications.
This week, listen to Ross McGill, founder of Teacher Toolkit, interview Jennifer Gonzalez, founder of blog Cult of Pedagogy, which covers many similar topics to Teacher Toolkit. Everything from classroom management to technology, policy, and social justice. In today's podcast, some of the things we'll be discussing are the operational challenges of running a blog, the importance of finding teachers that love teaching in your first year, and whose voices Jennifer is trying to uplift in education.
Hello everyone, this is Ross at Teacher Talk at the most influential blog on education in the UK. Today, I am interviewing Jennifer Gonzalez. Hi Jennifer, how are you? Or Jen, I should say.
Either it's fine. I just don't go by Jenny. That's the only thing.
I'm so excited to be talking with you today. I've followed your work for a long time. Could you introduce yourself to our listeners and tell everyone what you do?
Yeah, apparently I am the American version of Ross McGill.
Oh, right,
okay. We're sort of the same thing in parallel universes.
Yeah, we have.
So that's actually cool because you can introduce me to your audience and then I can promote this episode to mine. Oh my gosh, this dude has been doing almost the same thing as you over on the other side of the pond. So, so my site is called Cult of Pedagogy. Uh-huh. And I think I have not been around as long as you. I think you've been doing this a bit longer than me. I've been doing my site since 2013.
Yes.
And it's really very, very similar to what you do. I mean, I cover sort of everything from like individual, like instructional things to sort of classroom management things, technology, and then the broader sort of like policy, social justice, equity stuff.
So
pretty
roughly
everything that's going to make a teacher do their work better.
Of course. And, we are mirror personalities in that respect. What are your kind of statistics and analytics and, you know, what kind of traffic are you getting?
You know, it's funny because I used to pay a lot more attention to like my Google Analytics, and now I measure more based on actually podcast downloads is probably my best metric. And I get like 35,000 downloads per episode.
Incredible.
On average, some of them go up over 40, depending on if it's a really hot topic.
Right. Amazing. Could you just describe, so people listen here in the UK, so my stats are I'm about 75% UK traffic, about 10-15% America. So for people that don't know, could you just, I know you've described the blog, we'll come back to the blog shortly, but just your journey in education and when you started teaching.
So I started off as an English language arts teacher in a middle school, and I did that right outside the D.C., Washington, D.C. area for about 3.5 years. I took a pause because I wanted to get my master's degree and I wanted it in something subject specific. So I got that in writing and publishing from Emerson College in Boston.
Okay.
Then I went back into teaching where I am now, which is Kentucky, which is pretty close to Nashville, Tennessee.
It's kind of I've been to Nashville 20 years ago.
So it's a very different part of the country from D.C. And I did that for another 3.5 years. I took another pause to have babies, and I thought I was always going to go back into the classroom after my kids were in school. But in the meantime, I got hired on at the local university here. Western Kentucky University, to teach pre-service teachers, beginning teachers. This is people at their undergraduate level who have not been in the classroom yet.
Sure.
And you can do that without a PhD here. And so I did. I was surprised by that. And so I did that for 4 years part-time, and I really loved it. And so at that point, I kind of had a decision. Did I want to actually go and get my doctorate and do the university stuff?
Uh-huh.
Seriously, or not. And the not came in the fact that I, as part of getting my continuing education credits as a teacher, I had to take just a few technology classes. And I learned how to do a blog.
So was this like 2012, 2011?
It would have been like 11, 12, yeah.
Okay. So that's when the blog started to emerge. Okay.
I really liked it and decided instead of going the academic route, I wanted to keep teaching teachers, but just basically do it online. And then everything else was self-taught after that. I started learning how to make video and podcasting, and it just took off from there.
And there you go. Yeah, it's very similar to my own journey. So what were you like at school yourself?
I was a very smart kid, but I kind of hung out with like the burnouts and the smokers. So
right, okay.
So I kept it together academically pretty well.
Right.
But I was a good kid and I didn't cause a lot of trouble. But I probably didn't work as hard as I had.
And what was your inspiration to get into teaching?
You know, it was every good and bad teacher that I had.
Mm-hmm.
I wanted to keep doing it the way that the good ones were doing it and more than that, do the opposite of what the bad ones were. And I think I've learned this from talking to a lot of teachers. I think a lot of us who go into teaching are the kinds of people who really like the trappings of teaching. We like the idea of having our own space that we can decorate and materials that we can design. And, you know, it's there's a quote from Roald Dahl's book, Matilda, and I'm going to get it wrong, but it's I think it was Miss Trunchbull, the headmaster, who said school would be a perfect place if it weren't for the children.
Yeah. No, it's true. It's true.
And I got that because it's like I love setting everything up, but then once the kids showed up, they kind of mess up all your perfect plans. So, but I always did like – I kind of had a natural affinity for working with kids, especially teenagers.
Okay.
So that's kind of what drew me.
And what was your kind of subject specialism?
English,
of course. Coming to the kind of cult of pedagogy, I was reading more about, is the teacher's lounge the staff room? Is that your description? Yeah. Okay. So tell me more about, you know, we're in kind of 2012, 2013, you're learning how to blog and you're finding the kind of frustration of things that you weren't getting in your teacher's lounge. So describe what was happening in 2013-14 with the cult of pedagogy emerging.
So when I was in full-time teaching in the regular public school, that was where the teacher's lounge frustration came in. I worked with a lot of people, particularly, I don't know if this is the case in the UK, but here, middle school in particular tends to draw the most negative people. I don't know why.
Okay.
But there were just a lot of people in teaching who just disliked the kids, disliked the work, disliked the administration, disliked the parents.
It seems to happen. It happens in high school. Well, we've got a very disjointed system over here at the moment on our small little island. You've got different levels of frustration in different sectors. All teachers struggle under marking and, you know, managing behaviour and the admin. But it seems when I look at workload research in the UK, teachers in primary school, so that's kind of 4 to 11 years old, in academies which are free from the local, they're still public schools or state schools, but they are free of local government to do their own decisions. They seem to work more hours than anyone else. In our system, but also the frustration or that love of teaching tends to dissipate slightly in high school schools, particularly disadvantaged schools, where the moral purpose is there but the brutality of the admin, the behavior, starts to crush the heart, I suppose.
Yeah, that's all sounding very, very familiar. Yeah. And so I found myself to be one of the people who I was excited about what I was doing. I wanted to talk about strategy and materials and ideas. And, you know, I would show up at lunch or whatever. It was just sort of like, it was just negative coming back to me. And I would find people down the hall, one or two people in the building who, you know, we could actually really, you know, get into it together and keep each other positive. But it was hard to find. And so that was part of my idea in starting the site was, I think, online, maybe we can all find each other and support each other
so,
in that way.
I look back at my site when I started mine in 2007 or 2008, but where it is today, I moved from Blogger to WordPress.com in about 2011. And even looking back to that time, I look at it very much experimental and with embarrassment also. You know, before you got the message, when you could do click to tweet and it would automate a message for a reader, I used to code all that myself. So it took hours. But do you look back at your website in the early days with a sense of pride now or a sense of embarrassment?
It's a little bit of both. Every now and then I'm sort of surprised that I kind of got it right in some ways on a few things.
Yeah.
But it was also a lot of sort of like throwing things to the wall and seeing what sticks. You know, I think early on I wanted to write more about policy level things. Yes. And I realized very quickly there's no way I was going to be able to keep up with that.
No, you can't.
I wanted to stick with more evergreen stuff that would really, you know, someone could find it 6 years later and it would still help them. And I've also just, I think I have learned a whole lot more in the last couple of years about diversity issues and equity issues.
So it sounds like you've navigated in the blogging world. They're very similar to myself. As you can't keep up with all the announcements, all the news, because you're a small team, essentially yourself. So where again, I think you've also got your audiences from sharing practical tips for teachers that are easy to manage, easily accessible, you know, free or very relatively cheap. How have you navigated over the last 4 or 5 years in terms of balancing your commitments as a mum, your commitments as a teacher, as a blogger? You know, I'm sure you get thousands of press releases and all sorts of things in your inbox also. How do you cope with it? What are your tips?
Oh, gosh. I don't know how well I actually do cope with it. There's a lot of deleting of those press releases. I'm never going to take on a media press pass again for an event because apparently you're trading your inbox for that.
Right. That's true.
I've just learned how to say no to about 90% of the things that cross my desk, really, whether it's people wanting to just jump on a call to talk about their tech tool or requests for speaking engagements. And I just realized it gets easier and easier to say no. I've also, this past year, I've had to get better at balancing things because I had a really rough personal year last year. So I had to really look at what is my main thing that I have to keep.
Keep the main thing the main thing.
Yes. That was just, you know, every other week put out a really solid podcast with a blog post. And if you can keep doing that, Jen, like,
I'm on a blog, a resource, a podcast. Have you gone like I have, where you've tried to experiment and blog every day just to see what happens, and then it's just not, it doesn't work?
I couldn't do that. I'm not sure if you're familiar with Mark Barnes. He publishes the Hack Learning series over here, and he and I are pretty good friends. And he used to do a site called Brilliant or Insane, which he's basically let sit. But he and I used to talk about this all the time. He said, Jen, you should be putting something new out every day. And I even knew back then. I said, there's no way. Did you try to do that?
Well, I've tried. I looked at Seth Godin's site, and I don't think he does a lot of coding. I think he just literally writes a couple of paragraphs and it goes out and he lets everyone else do the work. I like to add an image. I like to code behind the scenes. I like to refine it a little. And I'm not a Seth Godin, but I've got one or two blogs that will be the first hit on Google. But it's been well crafted and well sourced. You know, there's a reason why quality, not quantity, is a popular saying, isn't
it? Like, I can tell by looking at your site that you care a lot also about the aesthetics and about the user experience. And that does, that takes time.
I love your site. It's very, I love all the graphics, the cartoons. It's very easy on the eye. Dual coding, perfect. and I know America's very, bring it back to kind of policy stuff, because I think my doctorate, I'm looking at policy and social justice. And I think that's what happens when you, I guess, are become a bit of an influencer, which is what you are. What's the kind of key thing you'd want to see change in Kentucky, or maybe, I don't know if we can go to system level in America. It's quite a big place.
Yeah, it's really, and I don't know if it's the same there, but for here, it's just the obsession with testing. And we're in a weird spot right now because pretty much anybody who is an influencer, anyone who is a teacher, anyone who is a parent, they're all saying the same thing, which is too much emphasis on testing. It's not working. It's not improving the learning in any way. And it's not even really mentoring. And yet somehow there's still, I think, a lot of schools that are implementing practices that are, they, I think they still feel shackled by the testing. Okay. They feel like they have no choice. So there isn't anybody right now at the top saying, enough with the testing. We're going to just drop it way, way down and let you do what you need to do. And I think the problem here in the U.S. anyway is that most of the time, I think people that rise to the very top at a policy level have no classroom experience at all. These are people that come from the business world. So they try to apply a business model to education and it never works.
Yeah, no, it never works. My hope is that now we're talking more about mental health. If you think of our children that are immersed with that culture, when they get to our age and then they become in positions of power, I think that the gender testing hopefully will be a thing of the past, and the mental health conversation will hopefully dominate the what we do in our schools. Fingers crossed. So if we take that with testing, what are the, you know, I'm sure you do also. I get emails from new teachers, from parents, from policymakers. And I start to get a sense of the issues at a national level for the burden of teachers. What messages do you get through your social media, through your inbox, in terms of teacher workload? What are the pressures of American educators?
I think one of the biggest complaints right now from teachers is that they are required in certain schools to document the heck out of every single thing they're doing. They have to just write down. And they know in most cases that what they're documenting is not being read by anybody, and yet it's still required. And I think, unfortunately, so much of this comes down to the personality and the ego of the person running the school.
You call them administrators?
That's like a generic term. We call them principal usually, the school principal.
Okay.
But administrator kind of encompasses the district superintendent. And so, you know, usually the schools where the teachers are the most miserable is where there's somebody in charge who has a control issue.
Yeah.
Basically.
Well, I think that happens in any organization, but you'd be surprised, but it does exist also in schools. I often say that, teachers leave schools because of the leadership, not because of the kids or the school. And is it the case that in Kentucky, if you move to a school, another school, you have to kind of start your salary increments again? Or is that a different kind of area within the U.S.?
Usually if you move within the state, you stay on track.
Okay.
And there are a lot of states that will honor your previous experience. So if you come in with, say, 7 years of experience, they might start you at, you know, level 7 and say, well, you documented years of experience. So it doesn't necessarily mean you start over.
So there's an escape route for some teachers, essentially, if they're not happy in their schools. And what tips and advice are you giving to teachers on your site regularly in terms of hacks and, you know, that teacher's lounge you never had?
There's a bunch of them. It depends on the angle you're going for. But, there are ways to make education, the actual teaching part, more satisfying in terms of getting more bang for your buck. There's teachers that are beating their heads against the wall with practices that aren't really working, you know. They say, oh, I'm teaching this over and over again. The kids aren't getting it. And it could be that they're teaching the wrong thing or they're doing it the wrong way. And then there's also the time management piece, which for the last few years, I just send them to my friend Angela Watson. She runs 40-hour teacher work week club. She's got a system down that combines mindset work, organization, and time management stuff. And pretty much everybody that's been through that program who's done it with Fidelity sees massive changes in there.
What's the social justice things that are most passionate to you that you kind of thread into your podcasts, your blogs, your resources? What's driving you at the moment?
What I'm trying to do as much as possible is elevate the voices of people that are doing that social justice work full time or you know, more actively than I am.
Mm-hmm.
Probably our biggest issue here in the States is the fact that the vast majority of teachers are white females from sort of middle class homes. And the vast majority of the students they teach are not that.
Yeah.
So getting these teachers to, number one, recognize that they have some work to do in terms of understanding their students at a deeper level, getting past that initial defensiveness in them is the hugest first step.
Yeah.
Once they've crossed that bridge, then there's a vast array of resources that can help them learn. But that very first step of understanding, you are not a racist. It is okay that you still have some growing to do.
Yes.
Here's all the stuff you can grow.
I'm familiar with the EduColor movement over in your part of the world.
A
website and a diversity of speakers and those issues. We have something similar here in the UK, which is relatively new, you know, literally 3 or 4 years. We're having the same conversations over here. You know, in the UK, are teaching Black, Asian, minority, ethnic populations about 19%, but our teachers do not represent the population. And, you know, it's different in cities, but, you know, you go out into kind of rural communities and things and the diversity drops significantly. So any other insights from your website, Pearls of Wisdom, from things that you see? Give us a kind of signpost to the most popular thing on your site that people come to that's been timeless.
Okay, well, there's been a couple, but probably the one big timeless thing is my post Find Your Marigold, which is one of my earliest posts. I wrote it in the first year or so, and the point, if anybody has not seen it yet, is when I was working with new teachers, I would say to them, there's tons and tons of tips that you're going to get on teaching, and they're all good, but probably the most important number one thing that you need to do in your first year of teaching is find people who love teaching, who love the kids, whose work you want to emulate, because you will become like them if you hang out with them. And they will point you toward all of the resources that you need, but if you spend time with people who are really negative, you're going to become like that too. And the marigold metaphor is when people do planting of gardens, marigold is known as a protective plant, and they will often plant marigolds next to young plants.
Oh, right. I'm going to read that. I've not read
and
that.
And that sort of sends off pests and disease.
All right. My wife's an avid gardener, so I'll ask her if we've got any marigolds in our garden. But yeah, it's a good tip. So a couple more things, and then I'm going to fire loads of quick things at you. Can you tell me more about the aerodynamics of exceptional skills? So this video that I've seen you on, Southwest TED Talk, was it?
It felt like a TED Talk. It was at South by Southwest, which is a big, it's a very hip conference.
Yeah, I've been
invited to that.
I need to come, actually. I was invited a couple of years ago, so maybe I should make plans to come over. So tell us about it.
Yeah. Fun. So since I got invited to do that keynote, it's actually based on this whole idea of me sitting in this teacher's lounge wanting to share my great ideas. And whenever I go to these conferences, you get full up on, you know, you got your tote bag full of ideas that you want to take back to your school. And the success rate of actually making those things happen once you get home is very, very low.
Yes.
And so what I compared it to the metaphor of flight, that there are different forces that actually help a plane get up in the air and stay up in the air. So I give some parallels to this idea of getting your schools moving in a positive direction.
Mm-hmm.
And one of the things I focused on is this idea of drag and thrust in aerodynamics. Drag is all these negative forces that kind of work on us. And thrust is our own energy that we can continue to push forward. And so that talk is based on 9 different things we can do to improve thrust and reduce drag. And so like one of them I talk about is validation, that when you're communicating with people who are being kind of negative about stuff,
mm-hmm.
if you can at least validate their point of view and make them feel heard,
mm-hmm.
it is going to get them on board more quickly. Because when a person feels that their point of view just is being completely disregarded, they're going to hold on to it even tighter.
Sure.
That's one of the 9 points that I was giving.
Right. Well, I'm going to watch it, and then we'll add a link into the podcast.
Okay.
Great. One last question. Again, it kind of goes back. Teachers Pay Teachers been around a long time in the States. 10 years now, easily? I know you've got a very prolific platform there. Myself and a couple of others were quite instrumental in getting something kick-started. I'd probably say accidentally, in the UK here in about 2013, when a large organisation called me out for being an author, and here's my free resources, but there's a link back to my site, you can buy my book. And so they basically stripped all my resources off their site. And I started to, so essentially I started to propose, well, I'm going to put my resources on Teachers Pay Teachers. What I want to ask you here is, what are your views on teachers not just sharing resources, but passing them off and selling them? And, you know, teachers are time poor. They also have limited budget. Who should pay for those resources? Is it the school itself or the teacher's own pocket? And I'm sure you've had this whole debate in your side of the pond also, but just give me some views on this.
Sure. Well, for one thing, I think anybody who has the talent to put together something that is high quality, and there's a lot of garbage out there going around on classrooms. If they've got the time and they've devoted the time to actually putting something together that other people want to use, then they should be paid for their time. You know, I just know when I used to look around online for teaching resources, it was just all ugly and not very good.
Yeah.
But in terms of who should pay for it, I one thing that TPT has been doing lately is making it easier and easier for schools to pay for those things. They accept purchase orders, they have school accounts now, and so they really have been working hard to get it to where schools could pay instead of the teachers paying out of their own pockets. In terms of the question of one of the things that TPT gets a lot of grief for is that, in fact, there is also a lot of garbage on TPT because it's an open marketplace. Anybody can open up a store and sell their things. So there's some copyright issues.
Yeah, I can copy your stuff, sell it as my own. How do they monitor it, or do they wait for the individual to report it?
They basically have to wait until reporting because the volume is just too much to keep up with.
Yeah.
And so they get a lot of grief, but it's sort of the same as Etsy or eBay or Amazon, anything
We have the same issues here, that it's up to the individual to find the resource by accident and report it. And, you know, in most cases, they take it down immediately. But you kind of think, well, if someone else has profited from your ideas... it's very interesting how the marketization of education has now reached teachers individually. What I want to explore for my doctorate is, you know, with the future of education and teaching, I think, you know, you and I are perfect examples of teaching, but in another form. We're now teaching teachers online. I guess you'll also struggle with recruitment. I know attrition rates are 60% there in America. So, you know, we're struggling to recruit teachers, and I could sit at home and create loads of resources. Is that a challenge that you're also seeing, and the kind of those patterns emerging over in the States?
You mean in terms of regular education competing with sort of this entrepreneurial?
Yeah. So how are we going to entice the next generation of teachers into your teacher's physical lounge if I can sit at home and create resources all week and earn my salary and more?
Right. Well, I actually think that it's a completely different skill set that a person has in order to drive their own at-home business. And I know a lot of people who either don't have the organizational skills or maybe not even the talent in terms of creating the materials to even do that kind of work and actually excel in the classroom more. So I don't actually think it's as much of a competitor.
Yeah. No, I think...
I don't... draining the classrooms, really.
I
do know that a lot of teachers are looking for ways to basically work a little bit less and make a little bit more money.
Yeah, sure. If I think back to, you know, if you've been blogging a long time, if you think of new bloggers today, they've got as examples to copy to create a blog. They haven't gone through the initial journey of coding that we might have done 10 years ago. I just find it quite fascinating that with the world now so accessible through Wi-Fi that you can create any resource, and if no one finds you, you could potentially make a lot of money out of it. And in some respects, I guess I think it would happen in any industry, not just teaching. You're going to find new ways of people working, including being at home. One last question then is, how adaptive is American policies with flexible working for teachers who might want to work part time, or is that still way off?
I think it's probably still way off, and it's a shame. I think so much of that also comes down to healthcare in this country, because we still don't have a universal health care.
Right.
People still only get their health care through a job, and most jobs won't give you health care unless you're working full time.
Right.
And that is a sticking point for all businesses everywhere, for, you know, American innovation, honestly, that we'd have more people doing different things and contributing in different ways if they weren't tied to a 40-hour-a-week job for the health benefit.
Okay. I'm going to fire loads of quick questions at you. Just to finish off, no pauses or hesitation. And I'm going to put some music on the background each time I ask a question to distract you. It's just the clock ticking down. Be ready. And you've got 30 seconds to answer each question.
Okay.
So first question, tell me what you're working on right now, your project for today.
Today?
What's on your desk?
I just started a book, Ross.
Right, a new book.
Yes, I've never written a book completely by myself. It is going to be a massive sort of manual of like good teaching practices. It's probably going to take me 2 years.
Okay, got a book title or not yet?
Yes, The Cult of Pedagogy Manual.
Of course. Okay. If I was visiting Nashville for 48 hours, what would you recommend I did?
Listen to live music. And I'm just now starting to get to know Nashville. So I'd say definitely listen to live music and walk around on Music Row.
Okay, great. If I was setting up a blog today from scratch, what platform would you recommend?
WordPress, for sure. I'd say start with .com and then eventually go through the painful process of going to .org if you wanted to actually make money from it. But you know this.
Yeah, I've done that, and now I'm on my own site, which is the next stage. What book are you reading at the moment?
I'm reading a book called The Great Alone, which is about a family that moves to Alaska.
Okay, great. A tip for a teacher that wants to start podcasting?
It would be come up with at least 10 ideas for episodes before you ever start really getting into it, because you should have a collection instead of just a single episode.
Sure. If you weren't doing your dream job today, what would you be doing?
Graphic design. I love graphic design, and I have no training in it. And I would really, if I could have a second career, I would love to get some formal training in graphic design.
Okay, great. If you were doing a PhD, what would you be studying?
Oh, probably the same stuff that you're studying, honestly. Trying to unlock the trouble in education and finally solve it.
I'll send you some of my initial papers if you're interested. You can chuck them in the bin if you want. What's your biggest achievement?
I immediately thought of my kids, but that's such a generic cliche. I'd have to say Cult of Pedagogy, honestly.
Yeah.
I feel like I've had a greater influence on education than I ever did as a teacher or as a teacher at a small university.
Sure.
I'm really proud of it, yeah.
Where are you flying to next in terms of work?
South Carolina. I am giving a couple of little workshops at a conference, a teacher's conference in South Carolina next month.
Have you done any work in the UK?
No, but you know, I spent a chunk of my childhood in the UK.
Whereabouts?
I lived at, my father was in the Air Force, so I lived at RAF Lakenheath and, that part of the country, that big chunk up there on the right.
Yes.
It's called East End. East Anglia. And then he was also stationed at RAF Upper Hayford by Oxford. So I lived in a town called Bicester.
All right. I know. Yeah. So you love to come over soon. Okay. A couple more. Who would you recommend I interview next and why?
Do you know John Spencer?
I don't know.
Hey, he is a really interesting, thoughtful guy. Mm-hmm. He's got really interesting ideas. Look him up. He's got years and years of stuff. He was blogging before.
Okay, sure. Where can listeners find out more about you? Blogs, the web address, what is it? Cult of?
It's cultofpedagogy.com. And if you go there, you will see links to my Twitter, my Facebook, my podcast, my YouTube channel, all of it.
Okay, sure. And I'm going to stop the music for the last question. What do you want your legacy to be, Jen?
I want my legacy to be that it's what I hear in emails on a fairly regular basis, that I helped one teacher interact with one student differently and that impacted that one kid's life. And if I can do that over and over and over again.
Yeah, brilliant.
That's great. Yeah.
Jen, it's been an absolute honour to have your time and to connect with you at long last. I hope we speak a little bit more regularly. I'm very excited to get this podcast out to people, but thanks for your time and for your amazing insights.
Thank you so much, Ross. It was really fun.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To continue the conversation, head over to www.teachertoolkit.co.uk and our social media channels to access all the links and resources mentioned on today's show. Why not share this with your colleagues and give them the gift of time, reduced workload, and increased impact? Until the next time, before you look after your students, look after yourself.